Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer Podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, and healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best: provide cancer updates, research, and education. In this week's episode, we spoke with Dr. Dan Tran, an oral and maxillofacial surgeon at VCU, who was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer at the age of 30 while still in his residency program. Dr. Tran was about to begin a 5-month anesthesia rotation in the fall of 2017 when he began developing excruciating back pain that limited his ability to walk. Within months, just before Christmas, Dr. Tran's life and goals would change in an instant.
It all started during my second year of residency. I was in residency for oral maxillofacial surgery, and typically we spend 5 months of that residency just learning how to do anesthesia, put people to sleep for surgery. And it's usually like the best time of our lives because it's like vacation to us, because it's normal hours, 8 to 3, sometimes 8 to 4, or six to three, 6 to 4, which is like unheard of. All weekends we're off, and we're like, man, this is awesome. And so right before I started that rotation, I started having some back pain. And when I had that back pain, I thought it was just because I had my newborn daughter. She was, I think, 2 or 3 months at the time. And I was like, it's because I keep picking her up and putting her back down in the crib. I was like, that's kind of odd because she only weighs like 11 pounds. So it's not like she's heavy, but I just attributed to that. And it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And then it was probably about the end of the first month of the anesthesia rotation where I started to develop a severe back pain, numbness in my legs, numbness that started going up my legs. And then it came to the point where I went to another doctor and I said, they got an x-ray of my back, and they said they don't see anything. So I was like, okay, that's fine. Waited a couple more weeks, got worse. I was like, I need an MRI. And then they said, okay, we'll schedule for an MRI. But the MRI was so booked out that I couldn't get an MRI for 2 or 3 weeks. And then finally the numbness started coming up a lot higher. And then I started worrying that it could become permanent. And so I went to the emergency department. And at the emergency department, I just told them what was happening. And I said, hey, I really want an MRI right now. I want to know what's going on. And then, previously to that, the back pain had become so bad that I couldn't sleep laying down. So I like slept sitting up on my couch and just like with like pillows propped up my head. And I just like sat up like this and really can't sleep like that. So I was only getting like an hour or two of sleep. Then I went to go get the MRI. And then I knew it was bad when I went to get the MRI. And then they said, hey, stay in the machine. We have to do another scan. I was like, huh? I was like, okay. And then that's when like my brain started like running and I was like, okay, what's going on? What's going on? Then they got me back into the wheelchair and they said, hey, the radiologist wants to talk to you directly. And I was like, what? I was like, it's gotta be really bad because the radiologists, I don't know how much you know about radiologists, but they went into radiology so they didn't have to see people because they have to just look at x-rays all day. And so I knew it was bad. He knew that I was a resident at VCU. And so he called me back into the room. He's like, hey man, I got bad news for you. Something's going on. Not sure what it is. We're gonna have to order more scans, but most likely this is some type of malignancy or cancer. And then because they had showed my spine and he was showing me the views. He was like, if you look here, here, and here, it looks like something's deteriorating your spine and they can't. And I was like, well, could it be this? Could it be this? I started running through everything else. And he was like, the only thing I could think of, and it's very rare, is if you had, I forgot what the word was, a vascular malformation, I think, in 3 different spines. He was like, but in one spot, sure, but in 3 different spots, doesn't make any sense. He was like, you most likely have something else and we have to scan the rest of your body. And so that's when I was like crap, like, what do I do now? So I got the CT scan and that's when they found the lesion in the lung. And that's when they found a lesion in the lung and they said, most likely it's lung cancer. But you're so young, so this doesn't really make much sense. But like, we'll just keep on doing a full workup. Because I had developed the paralysis in my legs and the pain in my back, they called the neurosurgeon in. The neurosurgeon evaluated me and said, we need to take you to the operating room in the next couple of days so that you don't develop permanent numbness. And so I think I went to the hospital on Saturday. They were going to do surgery on Sunday. And the neurosurgeon talked to me and said, if you wait till Monday, we'll have a better team of like assistants. And it's not, it's up to you what you want to do. I told him, yeah, I mean, I knew the drill. I was like, yeah, if you have the weekend team, it's not his primary team. So I was like, okay, let's wait. We'll do it on Monday. And so on Monday, they took me to the OR to take out the tumor in my spine, infuse my spine. After that, it was just a long road to recovery trying to figure out what to do next.
Dr. Tran discusses how he was hoping to hear that he had a targetable mutation that could be treated.
I was hoping they had floated the idea of me having a certain special mutation that they could treat with just oral medications. Because I was so young, most likely I had one of those mutations. And the biopsy they took out of my spine, that was a tumor, got the information from that. And then I would get a call because it's happened during Christmas time, the biopsy and the results took forever, like 5-6 weeks to come back. And I was just like, what is going on? Then I would periodically get calls, and I was just researching everything possible about targeted mutations. And I was like, they would call back and say, you're not ROS1, sorry. You're not EGFR, sorry. And it just kept going down the list, and I would be crossing these things off the list like, man, which one of these am I going to be? I hope I'm one of these. And then finally they called and said, you're ALK positive. So it looks like that we can start this medication that should be able to treat it. And so I started the medications, and then the tumor just started vanishing. And so I've been on that medication on this targeted medication now, I think 32 months, and doing pretty well. Just the only side effect I really have is some fatigue, but nothing too crazy. And then, went back to residency, I think 2 months after my diagnosis, because I had to try to figure out what I wanted to do. I had to figure out if I wanted to continue on and finish, or if I would kind of just say, hey, it's over. Let's just enjoy the rest of your life and just kind of go and not work anymore. Just sit back, collect disability. And then I started thinking about it. When I found out I was ALK positive, I was like, well, the median progression-free survival has been increasing. They don't know what's happening. It's such a new area. Lung cancer has developed so much research around it. And I told myself that if 10 years from now, that was 2.5 years ago, 10 years from now, if I didn't finish and I was still alive, I would be so angry at myself. But I knew that if 3 years from now and I finished, I don't think I'd be angry with myself for finishing. And so that was what drove my decision to go ahead and go back to residency and finish residency. And looking back now, I'm glad I did that because I'm still here. I'm working. I'm an attending now at VCU. And I don't think that would have happened if I didn't continue on to residency. And so all those decisions, I've been fortunate to be able to have a targetable mutation. Not everyone is, but I was. And now I just live life 3 months at a time because I get a CT scan every 3 months. The current research shows that this medication does not work forever. 50% of people, it stops working about 33 to 36 months into it. Unfortunately, I'm at the 32 month mark. And so I'm getting close to that 50% mark, but that's not to say that I couldn't be on the other end of that 50% where I'm the top 1% who makes it last for a long time. So until then, I just, maybe a week before my CT scans, I get a little bit nervous. The day of my CT scan, I get a little bit nervous. And then the clock resets after I talk to my doctor and say, and they tell me, hey, everything looks good. And then I get to live a relatively normal life for another 2.5 months.
Dr. Tran highlights what was going through his mind at the time of diagnosis and discusses why he considers himself one of the lucky ones.
I think it sucks. Everyone gets dealt a different set of cards, and I got dealt a crappy hand, but it kind of depends on what you do with it. I've always had a pretty laid back kind of personality, and understood that there's things that I can't control, things I can't control. This is something I could not control, but I can control what I do with it. And so I think that's helped me a lot. I think fixating on things that you can't control is what really ruins you. And that's all you think about. Being that young, I was like, this isn't fair. Obviously everyone thinks that. But there's a lot of things that aren't fair. I was lucky enough that at least I had a daughter already. So some people who are diagnosed with cancer young, they can't have kids anymore. I was already married. I had accomplished a lot of already things that I wanted to, and as far as like career aspects, I didn't finish residency yet. I, at first, when I had researched lung cancer, I didn't know much about it. And everything I read said, you have 6 to 9 months to live. And that was when I was like, that's when you go to that, those stages, denial, bargaining. And I started bargaining and I was like, well, 9 months, man, just give me 5 years. And so I got, I think I'm going to get that, thankfully. And I think, cause I just wanted to see my daughter grow up a little bit because she was so young at the time. She was just a baby. And not as fun at that age, but I just wanted to see her kind of grow up and see what she would most likely become. It's still tough to think about it sometimes.
Dr. Tran notes how being a medical professional has been a positive, but also a negative during his cancer journey.
I think it helps, but it also hurts. There's a beauty in being blissfully ignorant and not knowing. But because, you know, I'm in this field now, I mean, my curiosity always gets to me. I'm constantly reading about it. And then you're reading about it, hopeful that there's going to be something great coming out. And then when you don't find anything good, you're like, well, that kind of sucks. But on the flip side, it's helped me become a better, or to be a better patient advocate for myself. Because you, as a care provider, you kind of know where all the holes are and where things get dropped and where things get missed. And so you keep better records as myself as a patient. I'm like, well, you know, unless there's a system in place for this, they're probably going to forget about that. So it's been nice for me to be able to have resources to research it myself. That's how I knew I found the right oncologist, when he knew all the answers to all the questions and read everything I've already read. And so that's been helpful to help me navigate the medical world. Like, how do I get to this doctor? What do I need to do next? Like, how do I set this up? That's definitely been helpful. But then again, you're also as a doctor, you also end up being the worst patient because you hate treating other doctors. They just think they know a lot more than they think than they know. Cause you know, oh, I've read that too. And so it's kind of a double-edged sword. I don't know if it's more helpful or more hurtful being a doctor.
Dr. Tran elaborates on how his cancer journey has influenced how he interacts with his patients.
I've always been pretty a compassionate provider or doctor and kind of had pretty good empathy with patients. I think it hasn't really made me more empathetic. I've always had that. The one thing it does help me with, though, is when somebody comes in and I don't treat cancer, but I do treat some of the complications of cancer treatment. And when somebody comes in and they're newly diagnosed, I try to give them some sense of hope. And that's when I tell them that I'm also a lung cancer patient, or I have lung cancer. And if you look at me, you couldn't really tell. And there's so many different treatments out there. You don't know what your diagnosis can mean for you. I know you're newly diagnosed, but you know, there's hope. There's other avenues of treatment. There's different ways that they're newly treating cancers now. And to kind of help alleviate some of their fear, it's definitely bad when a biopsy comes back and it shows us cancer. But I think letting the patients know that there is hope out there kind of gives them something to help them get through it, as opposed to telling them you have cancer, this is what this means, you got to get through this treatment, you got to get this done. I think I have more hope than I did before. And I kind of try to express and show that to the patients and say, hey, there is hope and there's a chance.
Dr. Tran discusses what he says to his patients and offers others some advice.
I think what helps a lot is I don't tell them off the bat. And so when I meet patients and I talk to them, they just see, like, this is how I always talk. I talk pretty fast and fast paced. I like to talk to patients about what they do, their hobbies, talk to them about life, talk to them about where they live. And then eventually talk to them why they actually came here. But because of all that, I think all that rapport that you build with the patient ahead of time and letting them know that you really do care about them as a person and just seeing that positivity. And then when I tell them later, and it's very few patients I've actually told about my diagnosis, I think they see that, hey, wow, this guy is like he's still happy, he's still relatively normal, like how is he able to do this? And I explained my journey and talked about my journey, how I got to where I am right now and how I still worry about it. But if you only worry about it, and I tell them this too, if that's all you worry about, then you'll never be able to move forward. I think the biggest message I have for patients who have been diagnosed with cancer would be to be hopeful. I mean, I think research and hope is pretty much the two things that I think that gets me through. And just knowing that there's going to be something new treatment out there. Medicine is moving at such a fast pace right now. We have no idea where we're going to be in 5 years. When I was diagnosed with cancer, the chances of me surviving was 6 to 9 months. And now here I still am. And so anybody who's been newly diagnosed, just don't give up hope. Just hang in there. There's a chance that something may be coming out for you, and just don't give up.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.